Okay, let's make a beginning. I know there are people still coming in, but we've got quite a lot to get through. It really is a great pleasure to welcome Mr. Wang Xiaodong to the LSE. I've known him for a long time through his academic work, his articles, his prolific writing about Chinese nationalism. And so it's really great to actually have him here in the flesh for the first time. He has a long career in journalism and writing, publishing in the People's Republic. He was born in 1955 and graduated from Beijing University. It must have been one of the first intakes after the Cultural Revolution. He then studied in Japan, Tokyo Industrial University, and at the Chinese Academy of Social Sciences. He's carried out research in University of British Columbia. And he's had a career which started in foreign trade, I believe, and then moved into journalism. And what I would call very academic journalism. As I say, I know him mainly originally, from his works when he was the editor of the very important political journal in China, Strategy and Management, which, may I remind you to turn off your mobile phones, please? Strategy and Management played a key role in forming the intellectual debates of the 1990s and had a very interesting series of articles on issues like nationalism and globalization and the relationship between them. And Mr. Wang was one of the editors of that journal and also published a whole series of articles in those debates. He then published a series of books, the best known of which is the title of this talk tonight, more or less, China's Road Under the Shadow of Globalization. He's published over 100 items altogether. So he's a prolific writer, and he's been very influential in Chinese politics, and especially in the internet chat forums and so on. I think he'll say more about that later on, why that is so. I'd just like to, before we start, I'd like to say thanks to Mr. Yue Jianyong, who's a research student here, who's been helping organize this. And tonight, Mr. Wang is going to speak in Chinese. I'm going to translate, and Mr. Yue is here to help me if I get into difficulties, which I inevitably will. So please be patient, because this is a rather difficult format to work with, but I think it's the best one. Many people here do speak Chinese, and Mr. Wang's Chinese is very elegant and expressive. I will not be able to capture that in English, of course, so bear with me. But the complete texts of Mr. Wang's speech, both in Chinese and in English, will be put on the Asia Research Center website. This is being organized by the Asia Research Center here, and so thanks to the staff of the center, and especially Chris Lee, wherever she is, for organizing it. I'd also like to apologize to Mr. Wang for bringing him here during the Chinese New Year.
It wasn't better.
So I wish you all, though, a Happy New Year before we start. And I hand over now to Mr. Wang.
Okay. I'm very sorry. My English is not good enough to deliver this speech directly in English. So I'll deliver this speech in Chinese. So let's begin. 民族主义在近代中国曾占有相当重要的地位。清末革命家梁启超先生曾经使用最美丽的语言赞美民族主义。中华民国的国父孙中山先生的三民主义当中的一个就是民族主义。所以民族主义曾经是1949年之前中国国民党政权官方意识形态的一部分。Nationalism
once occupied a relatively important place in recent Chinese history. The Qing dynasty reformer Liang Qichao elegantly praised nationalism, and it was one of the three ideologies espoused by the National Father, Sun Yat-sen.
然而，在1949年之后，随着中国共产党政权的建立，那个
After the establishment of the Chinese Communist regime in 1949, the official ideology was changed to Marxism-Leninism, and the term nationalism seemed to disappear from the life of the Chinese people.
在我30岁以前，我几乎没有听说过这个词，当然也不会有任何这个词的概念。
I don't think I heard this term before I was 30 years old, and of course I could not have had any idea of the concept behind it, so I never could have thought that later on I would become one of China's flag bearers of nationalism.
当代中国的民族主义的诞生最早也不会 当代中国的民族主义的诞生最早也不会早过1980年代末。
Contemporary Chinese nationalism cannot have been born before the end of the 1980s.
它的诞生原本和外国人没有太大的关系。
Originally, this birth did not have a strong relationship with foreigners.
它在诞生之初完全是出于对于中国知识界中我后来称之为逆向种族主义的思潮的质疑。
At first, it was born entirely from doubts about what I later came to call the tide of reverse racism among China's intellectuals.
我今天在这里无法详述逆向种族主义的各种现象。
Today, I cannot go into the different manifestations of reverse racism.
我只是简单地告诉你们，1980年代的中国是各种新思想大量涌现的时代，这里有很多新思想是非常好的，他们推动中国获得了今天的进步。 但也有一些思想非常荒唐，其中最荒唐、影响却非常大，至今仍旧在中国思想界、学术界乃至传媒界具有极大影响的一种思想，就是中国在这个世界上，中国是这个世界上的劣等民族。从他们的原始祖先开始，中国人就是一个劣等民族。
I can simply tell you that the 1980s was a period when all kinds of new ideas were appearing. Many of these ideas were very good and encouraged the progress we have today. But some were quite absurd, the most absurd, but very influential, and still having a big influence on China's intellectuals, academics, and media, was that the Chinese people are somehow an inferior nation and have been so since their earliest ancestors.
这样一种想法，我认为和希特勒的种族主义理论没有太大的区别。
In my opinion, this is not very different from Hitler's racism.
当今的西方人当中，也许有一些人会在心里对其抱有同情态度，但恐怕很少有人敢公开做这样的宣称，并把它说成是一种科学。Some
people in the West probably still have some sympathy with this kind of attitude, although very few would dare to openly advocate it or present it as science.
然而，当时中国的许多知识分子就是公开的宣扬这样一种种族主义理论，他们与希特勒不同的地方，只是把这种理论用来反对自己的种族，所以我创造了一个名词。
Nevertheless, many Chinese intellectuals at that time did openly advocate this kind of racist theory. The only difference between them and Hitler was that they directed this theory against their own race. This is why I coined the term reverse racism for this kind of theory.
我们可以从某种程度上理解1980年代中国知识分子的这种想法，因为他们还有整个中国的精英集团刚刚从文革的灾难当中走出来。
In some ways, it's possible to understand this thinking of Chinese intellectuals in the 1980s because they, along with the whole of China's elite, had just emerged from the disaster of the Cultural Revolution.
他们在文革中遭受了害人的苦难，对于自己的民族抱有这样的怨恨是可以理解的，但这种种族主义论调无疑是不正确的。
Having been traumatized by the hardships of the Cultural Revolution, it is understandable that they should harbor this kind of resentment of their own nation.
所谓中国当代民族主义的发端，就是源于对于这样一种种族主义论调的质疑。The
starting point of what is called contemporary nationalism is skepticism towards this kind of racist argument.
我们当时并没有使用种族民族主义这个词汇。如前所述，我们甚至没有听说过这个词汇。At
that time, we did not use the term nationalism.
这个词汇实际上是西方学术界和传媒界强加给我们的。
This term was in fact applied to us by Western academics and media.
大约从1990年代初开始，一些西方人对我们的思想开始不愉快了。
Starting around the early 1990s, some Westerners began to be unhappy about our thinking.
大量的攻击所谓中国的民族主义的新闻报道、学术论文和书籍，首先是在西方出现了。
The large volume of news reports, academic papers, and books attacking Chinese nationalism came first of all from the West.
中国的知识界主流自1970年代末以来一直是紧跟西方的。
Since the late 1970s, the mainstream of Chinese intellectuals has been closely tied to the West.
所以在中国的知识界也掀起了批判中国民族主义的浪潮。
So Chinese intellectuals also joined the tide of criticizing Chinese nationalism.
这时我们才知道，原来我们的这些思想叫做民族主义。
It was only at this time that we found out that what we were thinking was called nationalism.
有些人曾经告诫过我，民族主义这个词在二次大战之后，因为在西方，因为有与纳粹有关，所以是个贬义词。西方人是在用这个词骂我们，所以最好不要承认自己是民族主义者。
Some people warned me that nationalism had been a negative word in the West since World War II due to its association with the Nazis, and that Westerners used this to reprimand you. So it is best not to admit that you're a nationalist.
我说这个我知道，但是西方人掌握着话语霸权。你与他去辩论，说你的思想不是民族主义，可他非说你是，你又怎么办呢？
I said I knew this, but that Westerners have a linguistic hegemony, and if you argue that you're not a nationalist, but they object that you are, what will you do?
所以不必去管他，说我们是，我们就是吧，反正最重要的是内容，至于叫什么名字并不重要，我们就是这样成为民族主义者的。
Okay, so it's best not to bother about them. If they say we are, then we are. What is most important is the content. The name you use does not matter.That's how we became nationalists.
稍微一点点西方学术界往往说中国当代的民族主义是政府鼓励的，是因为政府考虑到需要一个替代已经衰落的共产主义的新的意识形态。
Western scholars often say that contemporary Chinese nationalism is encouraged by the government because the government has to consider how to replace a failed communism with a new ideology.
再没有比这种说法距离事实更远的了。
This theory could not be further from the truth.
因为共产党从来没有中国的共产党政权从来没有考虑过放弃马克思列宁主义的意识形态。
It cannot be denied that very many of the early communists who grew up in the May the Fourth movement have some degree of nationalism in their hearts.
我刚才没说的，我只说简单，我没有继续说。我说因为中国共产党政府。从来没有放弃过马克思列宁主义的意识形态。
Because the Chinese Communist government has up till now hasn't given up the communist ideology.
所以民族主义从来不是通过官方的渠道来进行就传播的。
So nationalism up till now hasn't been propagated.Through the media.
中国的当代的民族主义之所以能够传播，主要是通过互联网这个新技术。当代中国的民族主义之所以能够传播，主要是通过互联网 Internet.
Okay, so the only way, the only medium through which nationalism can spread is through the media, is through the Internet.
因为在中国，互联网是一个言论比较自由的地方。
So because the internet is the only place, well, it's comparatively free speech in China, the only place where it's comparatively free speech.
实际上中国的民族主义是一个言论自由的结果。实际上中国的民族主义是一个言论自由结果。
What the nationalism we have today is the result of this new freedom of speech.
第三点我想讲一下。中国当代民族主义与民主主义的关系。在当代中国，是否应该实行民主制度，是关于内政问题的辩论的永恒的焦点。
In contemporary China, whether or not we should have a democratic system is one of the heated topics of political discussion.
中国所谓的自由派人士
The so-called liberal faction in China
为了妖魔化中国的民族主义。
In order to demonize Chinese nationalism.
坚持说民族主义和专制是分不开的，是专制的帮凶。
Always say that nationalism and dictatorship cannot be separated. That nationalism is the accomplice in crime of dictatorship.
其实这不是事实。
But that's just not true.
那我跳下，因为这个再快一些，是吧？从这儿啊，
在中国应不应该实行民主制度这个问题上，我们与中国的自由派原本没有分歧。
There is really no fundamental difference between us and the liberal faction over whether the question of whether China should have democracy.
我们与他们的分歧仅仅在于，在现实的国际秩序下，国与国之间的矛盾是否仅仅限于意识形态，是否仅仅限于专制与民主，有没有国家利益之间的矛盾。
The difference between us and them is that in the present international order,are the contradictions between states only limited to ideology, only limited to dictatorship versus democracy, or are there contradictions between national interests?
我们认为这后者是现实存在的，而且是相当重要的。
We think that the last of these exists in the present situation and is comparatively important.
是的，美国总统是由人民投票选举的，这很好。我们希望有朝一日我们自己的国家也这样做。
Yes, the President of the United States is elected by the people. That is good, and we hope that our country can be the same one day.
但我们同时也不应忘记，美国的总统是由美国人民投票选举的。我们中国人并没有权利参加投票，所以美国总统只会考虑美国人的利益，不会考虑我们中国人的利益。
But at the same time, we should not forget that the American President is elected by the American people, and we Chinese do not have the right to vote.So the American president can only consider the interests of the American people and cannot consider our interests.
我认为我们这个认识也是中国大多数人的认识。中国人中的大多数支持民主制度，但又有强烈的维护自己国家利益的意识。我有这样说的根据，因为我的职业并不是民族主义，而是民意调查。
This realization of ours is something that most Chinese people also realize. Most Chinese people support democracy, but they also have a strong consciousness of protecting their own nation's interests. I can say this because I'm not a nationalist by profession, but an opinion pollster.
所以，中国的自由派人士在国家利益的问题上，往往是无条件地站在其他国家，主要是美国一边的做法，严重地影响了他们自己在中国人当中的信誉。
So when it comes to the problem of the national interest, China's liberal faction stands unconditionally on the side of other countries, mainly the United States, which seriously dents its credibility in China.
除此之外，他们往往是无条件地站在富人一边的做法，又严重地损害了他们在中国穷人乃至中产阶级当中的信誉。
As well as this, they stand unconditionally on the side of the wealthy, damaging their credibility in the eyes of the poor and even the middle class.This is another issue.
因而也损害了民主、自由这些词汇在中国人当中的信誉。
Because of this, the faith of Chinese people in the words democracy and freedom has been damaged.
在过去的四分之一个世纪中，我认为这颗行星正在见证人类历史上并不多见的巨大变化，特别这个变化是和平的，这是在中国发生的巨大变化。
For the last quarter of a century, this planet has been witnessing a transformation that is unusually large in the history of humanity, especially because it is peaceful. This is the huge change that has been occurring in China.
在这二十几年中，无数的中国农民走进了城市。
Just 20 years, countless Chinese peasants have moved into the cities.
其实我想说啊，就是中国最在这二十年中发生最大变化，就是非常快的城市化。
Mr. Wang goes into some more detail in his article about the rapid urbanization of China.
我本来在这个文章上面有比较详细的说，但是我现在没有那么多时间了。我把这边跳过去啊。
So he hasn't got time to go into that right now.
各位女士们和先生们，
你们生活在英国这个现代民主制度的发祥地，对于我在下面将讲到的政治学原理肯定不会陌生。
Ladies and gentlemen, living in this birthplace of modern democracy, you will not be strangers to the political principles that I'm going to talk about next.
在国内政治中，我们把单一个人或组织对于权力的垄断叫做什么？叫做专制。而专制会剥夺我们的权力，这一点恐怕不用我来对你们多说了。
In domestic politics, what do we call the monopolization of power by an individual or an organization? We call it dictatorship.
那么这同样的一种政治结构放在国际关系中就没有问题了吗？
If we put the same structure into the international system, is there a problem?
不错，美国是一个民主国家，但那是它国内的事情。
Yes, the United States is a democratic country, but that is its domestic affair.
当今美国一个超级大国主宰世界的现实，恰恰说明了我们的国际秩序是一个专制的政治结构。
That this superpower is the pillar of the world situation at present proves that our international order has the structure of a dictatorship.
我并没有把美国人当今对于世界的统治看得太坏。我刚才已经说，其实刚才我没说，因为我跳过了一段啊，我并没有把美国当今对于世界统治看得太坏。实际上，中国从中得到了巨大的好处。
I do not think that the present American control over the world is too bad. I have already said that China is benefiting, and Mr. Wang says more about this in the complete text.
美国的帝国主义在现代可以说是一种开明专制。
The present American imperialism could be called a kind of enlightened dictatorship.
但是我们不放心，因为美国的外交政策有可能变化，世界的形势有可能变化，世界的资源状况有可能变化。若我们这样一个有将近世界四分之一人口的大国对此却无力防范，我们有一种非常强烈的不安全感。
But we are worried.Because American foreign policy could change, the world situation could change, the situation of the world's natural resources could change. If we, a big country with a quarter of the world's people, do not have the ability to guard against this, we have a strong sense of insecurity.
很多的中国知识分子相信美国人是天使，但即使美国人真的是天使，我们也不放心。恰恰是西方人的政治智慧告诉我们，宁愿三个魔鬼打架，也不要一个天使执政。
Many Chinese intellectuals think that the Americans are angels. If the Americans really were angels, we would still be worried. Just as the political wisdom of the West tells us, better to have three devils fighting than one angel ruling.
所以我们一定要自己参与到维护这个国际秩序中来。我们要致力于国际政治结构的民主化。
So we definitely do want to take part in preserving this international order.
民主化啊。
The democratization of this international order.
如果说我们今天的实力不够，这就是我们明天的目标。
If our present strength is not enough, we have to aim for this tomorrow.
中国最优秀的政治家恐怕都会这么考虑问题。
China's best leading politicians probably all think about problems in this way.
这里当然包括已故的邓小平先生。
Of course, that includes Deng Xiaoping.
中国那些最优秀的政治家在国际关系这个问题上，也许会在具体的策略上有分歧，但目标是一致的，这就是富国强兵，成为世界强国。
So although there might be some differences of strategy amongst China's leading politicians when it comes to international relations, their aim is the same, to have a wealthy country and strong army and to become a great world power.
这个目标是自1840年与英国的鸦片战争以来，中国几代杰出人物不分党派和信仰所共同持有的。
This target has existed since the 1840 Opium War with Britain and has been held over the generations regardless of party or belief.
只是到了文革之后，如前所述， 由于中国的精英集团在那期间遭受的害人的苦难，才发生令人痛心的分裂。
Only after the Cultural Revolution, as I explained earlier, because of the suffering experienced by China's elite, did there appear the present division that causes so much pain.
然而，有充分的根据表明，新的一代并没有遭受那些害人的苦难的中国人，并没有上一代精英那么强烈的对于自己民族的怨恨，他们会再次回到这个目标上来。
But there is plenty of evidence to show that the new generation of Chinese who did not experience such suffering do not harbor the resentment of the older elite towards their own people. They will return to this aim again.
有一些中国人可能很不愿意听到我讲富国强兵这样的话。
Some Chinese people will not like to hear me use the term wealthy country strong army.
他们之中的一部分并不见得反对这个目标，只是担心这种话会给中国威胁论增加了口实。
Some among them do not oppose this aim, but are concerned that it will add to the proof of the China threat theory.
我认为中国威胁论并不是完全没有道理。
I think that the China threat theory is not entirely without reason.
中国这么大的国家，经济发展的这么快，对于世界资源的需求增加的这么快，外国人感到威胁是一点也不奇怪的。这跟我们声称自己是小绵羊还是大老虎并没有太大的关系。
It is not at all strange that foreigners should feel worried about a country as large as China, with such rapid economic growth, with such rapidly growing demands for natural resources. It does not really matter whether we call ourselves a lamb or a tiger.
然而，中国的发展对于其他国家既是威胁也是机会。难道中国的经济发展没有给世界其他国家的经济，包括日本、美国和欧洲带来好处吗？
Whatever, China's development is a threat. To other countries, but it is also an opportunity. Has not China's economic development brought benefits to other countries in the world, including Japan and the United States and Europe?
难道中国人生产的产品没有给其他国家的消费者带来好处吗？
Have not the goods produced by the Chinese people brought benefits to the consumers of other countries?
如何把威胁变成机会？这要靠中国人的努力，也要靠外国人，特别是西方发达国家的努力。
How can threat be turned into opportunity? This will depend on the hard work of the Chinese people and will also depend on foreigners, especially the hard work of the advanced Western states.
各位女士们和先生们，坦率地说，在我第一个讲稿中并没有以下内容，这是因为我感觉到很可能没有时间讲这些内容。
Ladies and gentlemen, to be honest, the first version of this speech did not include the following section.This was because I thought there was not enough time to cover it.
然而，当我把第一稿拿给一些朋友看，征求意见的时候，有朋友提出来，我讲的似乎是一片光明，没有讲到全球化给中国带来的问题。
But when I gave it to some friends to look at to get their views, some said that I seemed to have only given the bright side and did not talk about the problems globalization is bringing to China.
特别是中国的民族主义者不可能不警惕全球化有可能给中国带来的问题。我不讲这些问题是不全面的，甚至好像在隐瞒什么，所以我增加了这方面的内容。
A Chinese nationalist especially cannot but be wary about the problems globalization brings to China. It would be incomplete not to talk about these problems as though something was being hidden. So I have added this section.
中国的民族主义者认为经济全球化对于中国的最主要的威胁就在于中国的民族主义者认为经济全球化对于中国的最主要的威胁就在于中国工业向国际分工的低技术一端迁移。
Chinese nationalists think that the greatest threat posed by economic globalization for China is the location of Chinese industry in the downstream of the international division of labor.
使得我们的经济发展受制于人，使得我们的科技发展受制于人，使得我们的国家安全受到威胁。
This puts our economic development under the control of others, and our scientific and technological development under the control of others, which is a threat to our national security.
关于这方面的辩论，自改革开放之初，一直持续到现在。
This debate has taken place from the beginning of the period of reform and opening down to the present.
关于这个问题，在中国至少有三种观点。
There are at least three points of view on this.
第一种观点，在这个地球村的时代，这根本就是杞人忧天。我们只要发挥比较优势就行了，在市场上什么赚钱，我们就干什么。
The first is that in this age of the global village, the world is for the taking. So long as we use our comparative advantages, then that's fine. We will do whatever it takes to make money in the market.
这是中国自由派的观点。他们的观点中有一个隐含的前提，就是我们应该高度信任美国人，不要担心美国人控制我们。
This is the view of China's liberal faction. There is an assumed premise in their view, which is that we should have a high degree of faith in the Americans and not be worried that they might control us.
除了他们之外，美国人也是这样劝说我们的。
The Americans themselves also try to persuade us in this way.
我曾经碰上过一个美国外交官，他极力向我兜售土豆片和芯片都是 cheap， 只要能赚钱没有任何区别。
Once I came across an American diplomat who vigorously told me that potato chips and silicon chips are both chips. so long as they make money, there's no difference. Yeah.
我说这不一样。如果我不卖给你们土豆片，你们可以立即自己生产；但如果你们不卖给我们芯片，我们却不能自己立即生产。
I said that they're not the same.If we do not sell you potato chips, then you can produce them for yourself. But if you don't sell us silicon chips, we cannot suddenly make them for ourselves.
他说：“你以为美国政府能够命令 Intel 不卖给你们芯片吗？放心吧，美国政府控制不了他们。”
He said, "Do you think that the U.S. government would order Intel not to sell you chips? Don't worry, the government can control them. Cannot control them."
然而，我一直到今天也不相信他的话。如果他的话是真的。那么为什么美国政府还要审查中国的联想就 Lenovo 收购 IBM 的 PC 部门一案呢？
But I never believed him. If he's right, then why is the US government scrutinizing the sale of IBM's PC division to Lenovo?
第二种观点我认为更合理一些。这种观点认为并不是我们盲目的信任美国人，而是现在实在没有其他的选择。中国再负担不起使用国家力量而不是市场的力量向高技术一端做超常常规行径了，中国必须暂时先忍耐下来，在低技术领域发挥自己的比较优势，等有了钱再向高技术一端前进。
The second point of view is a bit more reasonable, I think. This holds that we do not blindly trust the Americans, but that we have no alternatives at present. China cannot shoulder the burden of using its national power rather than market forces to gain.High technology in an unconventional way. China must patiently bide its time and use its comparative advantage in low technology until it has the money to move to high tech.
我认为邓小平是这种观点的代表。
I think that Deng Xiaoping is representative of this point of view.
第二种观点虽然与第一种观点的前提不一样，但落实到现阶段的国家的经济发展战略，特别是经济政策层面上，二者是一样的。
Although the assumptions are different, when they become economic policy, the results of the first and second points of view are the same.
第三种观点则是，中国现在就必须使用国家力量向高技术一端做超常规前进，否则中国就会被美国及其他发达国家所控制，今后也失去向高技术一端前进的可能性。
The third point of view is that China must use its national power to advance the high-tech development in an unconventional way. Otherwise, it will be controlled by the United States and other advanced countries and will lose the possibility of advancing to high-tech in the future.
十几年前，我本人曾经是第三种观点的主要支持者之一。
10 years ago, I was one of those who advocated this third point of view.
众所周知，最后是第一种和第二种观点占了上风。成为了中国这十几年以来的经济政策。
As everyone knows, the first and second points of view became dominant in China's economic policy.
我本人因为站在了失败者一边，基本上退出了有关经济政策的辩论，个人的职业生涯受到很大影响。
Because I was on the losing side, I stopped taking part in economic debates, and my personal profession and career were greatly affected.
直到现在，我也认为第一种观点不值一驳。而第二种观点实际上是在进行一场很大的赌博，就是在赌我们究竟是在经济上和技术上被美国人控制住，沦为美国的一个附庸，还是我们最终利用了外资或外资获得了更快的进步。
I still do not think that the first point of view is worth arguing about, and that the second point of view is taking a big risk over whether our economy and technology will be controlled by the United States, making us their subsidiary.Or whether we can ultimately use foreign investment to attain even faster progress.
回顾这十几年的历程，我认为不能说中国已经赢得了这场赌博，但赢的可能性很大，因为中国的工业现在已经出现了在市场力量推动下向高技术一端移动的迹象。
Looking back over the past 10 years, I do not think we can say that China has already won this bet. Although the chances of victory are very large because China is already showing signs of moving towards high technology under market forces.
如果中国最终能够赢得这场赌博，我会很高兴，因为我当时的观点虽然输了，但我的民族赢了。
If China can win this gamble in the end, I will be very happy because although my point of view lost, my nation will be the winner.
如果中国最终没有能够赢，那么人们可以赶紧去翻我十几年以前写的那些文章，我已经非常有远见地替他们准备好了药方。
If China does not win, then people can go back to read my old articles. I've already been far-sighted enough to prepare them as a prescription.
中国已经不大可能输得精光，有了这些药方还是有可能翻本了。
It's unlikely that China will lose everything. With these prescriptions, it might be possible to recover some of the money staked in the bet.
中国在目前的这条道路上行进的第二个问题就是环境污染和自然资源的消耗。
The second problem that China faces on the road to globalization is environmental degradation and the depletion of natural resources.
我们自己生活在中国这片土地上，中国的环境污染和自然资源的消耗关系到我们每一个人的生存。当然，我们要尽一切可能保护环境，节约自然资源。
This is related to the survival of every one of us who live in China. Of course, we want to preserve the environment and save natural resources.
然而对于一些外国人和一些中国人，特别是那些我前面提到的逆向种族主义者，对于中国破坏环境的指责，我认为却是不能接受的。
However, I cannot accept some of the accusations about China destroying the environment that are made by some foreigners and some of those reverse racists that I spoke about earlier.
我常常听到一些外国人及一些中国人说，这个情形不可能再容纳一个13亿人口的美国，如果中国人也要以美国人的方式生活，地球就会如何如何。
I often hear some foreigners and some Chinese say that this planet cannot absorb another America of 1.3 billion people. If the Chinese have the same style of life as the Americans, what will the world be like?
是的，一个美国人从出生到死，他所消耗的自然资源是一个中国人的几十倍到上百倍。
This is true. An American consumes tens or hundreds of times more natural resources in their life than a Chinese person.
如果中国人也像美国人那样消耗这个地球的资源，这个地球很有可能如何如何。
If the Chinese deplete natural resources like the Americans, then yes, anything can happen to this world.
然而我想问的是，是谁规定的只有美国人才有权利消耗这么多的资源？
Nevertheless, I think the problem lies in who decides that only the Americans have the right to consume so many resources.
是上帝吗？
Is it God?
美国的独立宣言不是说人生而平等吗？
Does not the American Declaration of Independence say that all men are created equal?
看来上帝没有这么规定过。
It doesn't look like God has made these regulations.
那么我们根据什么来分配这颗行星的资源呢？是靠市场竞争还是靠武力占有？
So, we distribute the resources of the planet according to what? Does it depend on market competition or on military supremacy?
靠哪一个，我们中国人都愿意面对挑战。
Whichever it is, we Chinese are willing to face the challenge.
如果说对于这些说法说不公平的只是一些中国的知识分子的话，那么还有13亿人对此不置一词，虽然对此不置一词，却以自己沉默艰辛的劳动在说不，我们不接受这样一个安排。我们就是要过和美国人一样的生活，即使我不能够，也要我的儿子、我的孙子能够。
If you say that this talk about unfairness is just from a few Chinese intellectuals, there are 1.3 billion people who may not use the same words, but who use their quiet and hard labor to say, "No, we do not accept this arrangement. We want the same kind of life as the Americans. If there is not enough for me, then I want there to be enough for my children and grandchildren."
中国有很多知识分子在劝他们不要追求这样的生活，他们搬出了西方的思想家，搬出了佛陀，也搬出了中国的老子、庄子、孔子、孟子，甚至毛泽东。
Many Chinese intellectuals implore them not to want this kind of life, deploying Western thinkers, Buddhism, and the Chinese philosophers Lao Tzu, Zhuangzi, Confucius, Mencius, and even Mao Zedong.
但是没有人能劝得住他们。
But nobody can persuade them.
我以为，与其用这些根本不起作用的说辞去劝说他们不要提高自己的生活水平，不如都在科学上想办法让中国人以及世界上其他更多的人过上和美国人一样的生活，却保持地球不如何如何。
I think that using this kind of argument to persuade them not to raise their standard of living is not as good as thinking scientifically about a way to let the Chinese and people all over the world to live like the Americans while conserving the earth.
科技发达的国家应该以更快的速度、更低的价格向发展中国家转移环保技术。他们这样做不仅仅是在拯救发展中国家，也是在拯救他们自己。
The countries with advanced technology should speed up and make less expensive the transfer of conservation technology. This will not only help save the developing countries, it will also help save the developed.
金钱和科学技术是可以解决一些问题的。我在郊区的住宅旁有一条河，这条河曾经是一条臭河，但2000年经过一年的治理就不臭了。
Money and technology can save some problems.By the housing complex in my neighborhood, there is a river that used to be very smelly. But in 2002, within a year, it was controlled so that it is no longer smelly.
因为北京有了钱，所以能以非常快的速度治理这条河流的污染。但中国的其他地方，很多地方还没有这么多钱。
Because Beijing has money, it is possible to control the pollution into this river very quickly. But there are many places in China that do not have this kind of money.
如果这些技术上的努力还不足以解决问题，那么这个国际社会就有必要商讨一个全新的控制环境污染和分配自然资源的体制。它必须是让绝大多数人感到公平的，否则我们这个世界就难以维持长久的安宁。
If working with this kind of technology is not enough to solve problems, then international society needs to discuss a complete system for controlling pollution and distributing natural resources.The majority of people must feel that this is fair. Otherwise, it will be hard for this world to maintain long-term peace and stability.
中国在目前这条道路上前进的第三个问题，就是人们常说的贫富差距拉大的问题。
The third problem faced by China on this road is what people often refer to as the widening wealth gap.
中国的左派对于这个问题可能有更多的研究。他们来讲这个问题可能比我更合适。
China's left wing has probably done more research on this problem.
我在这里只是简单的说，目前在中国前进的道路上的最大的潜在障碍是内政问题，是如何建立一个每一个人都生活都有一定的保障，每一个人都有更充分的自由，每一个人都能更充分的发挥自己能力的社会，使得我们的社会能够真正长治久安，使得中国人更认同我们自己的国家。
Sorry, I missed a tiny bit of the previous. What the left have to say on this is probably more appropriate than what I have to say. All I can simply say is that the biggest problem on China's road forward at present is domestic politics. How to establish a society that guarantees a certain standard of living for every person, for all to have a full degree of freedom, and for all to use their abilities to the full.This will be enough to allow our society to really be peaceful and stable and allow the Chinese people to more fully identify with their country.
至于怎样才能实现这样一个社会，我自己的观点已经在前面讲当代中国民族主义与民主的关系时讲了。
As for how to create this kind of society, I've already spoken about the relationship between nationalism and democracy, and there's more in the original text about that.
在中国当然也存在着另外一种解决这些问题的思路。这就是回到毛泽东的道路上去。
In China, there is, of course, another way of thinking about how to solve these problems, which is to return to the road of Mao Zedong.
但就目前而言，因为中国经济能够保持较快的发展速度，这种选择就只会停留在少数弱势群体和知识分子的嘴上。
But at present, because China can maintain a sufficiently rapid rate of economic growth, this option will just remain in the mouths of some disadvantaged minorities and intellectuals.
即使收入很低的农民也会很现实地选择进城打工来改善自己的生活。虽然这很艰苦，却比等待一个新的毛泽东更为现实。
As for those peasants on low incomes, they will pragmatically come to the cities to labor in order to improve their lives.Although this is very hard, it is more practical than waiting for another Mao.
然而如果中国的经济发展受到严重的阻碍，则事情是有可能发生重大变化的。
However, if China's economic development hits a serious obstacle, then things could change in a big way.
还有一个问题也是我的朋友提醒我的，说届时可能会有一些第三世界的听众，而一些第三世界的人士已经在指责中国参与了发达国家对于第三世界的掠夺，我应该注意这个问题。
There is one other problem that a friend reminded me about. There could be some in the audience from the third world. And there have already been some people in the third world who have reprimanded China for joining the advanced countries in plundering the third world. I should pay attention to this problem.
我想很真诚地告诉第三世界的穷兄弟们，中国人确实已经忘记你们很久了。
I want to sincerely say to my poor brothers and sisters in the third world, China forgot about you a long time ago.
中国现在的人均收入虽然实际上比很多第三世界国家还要少，但中国现在确实行进在经济全球化的快车道上，所以在中国不可能聚集起像拉丁美洲那样大的反全球化队伍，它甚至不能聚集起像欧洲和美国那样大的反全球化队伍。
Although incomes in China are still smaller than those in many third world countries, China is on the express train to globalization. So no anti-globalization movement can form in China like that in Latin America, or even like those in Europe and the United States.
中国人现在确实觉得他们和其他第三世界国家已经有点不一样了。虽然中国人现在的收入可能更低一些，但中国人却觉得他们很可能不用再去发出对于目前这个世界秩序的不满的吼声，只要按照现在这个样子继续任劳任怨干下去，就能大大改善自己的生活。
The Chinese already think they are a little different from the rest of the world. Although incomes at present are comparatively low, Chinese people feel that there is most likely no need for them to express dissatisfaction about this world order. They just need to maintain their present attitude of patiently working and biding their time to greatly improve their lives.
所以他们缺乏对于第三世界问题的共同感受。
So they lack sympathy with the problems of the third world.
另一方面，他们又觉得自己还没有富到应该拿出钱来帮助第三世界的程度。
On the other hand, they feel that they have not yet reached a level of wealth at which they can donate money to help the third world.
让比我们更富裕的西方国家去管他们的事情吧，会是很多中国人的想法。
Let the better off Western countries handle this issue, is the thinking of many Chinese.
然而，我想即使如此，中国的发展也是对其他第三世界国家有利，而不是不利。
Nevertheless, I think that China's development is of benefit to the third world states and not disadvantageous.
首先，从眼前说，中国经济的快速发展可以提高第三世界国家的原材料与产品的需求和价格。
First of all, looking at what is in front of us, China's fast development can raise the prices of commodities and goods from the third world.
其次，如果中国真正强大了，第三世界国家就会有更多的选择。如果美国不能善待你，你可以来寻求中国的帮助。同样，如果中国不能善待你，你可以去美国寻求帮助。这样就形成了一个力量的平衡，有利于国际政治结构的民主化。
Moreover, if China really does get big and powerful, the third world will have more choices. If the United States does not treat you well, you can seek help from China.If China does not treat you well, you can seek help from the United States. In this way, a balance of power can be created, which will be beneficial for the democratization of the structure of international politics.
从长远看，西方发达国家和中国都应该致力于一个第三世界国家的日子能够过得比较好的国际秩序。
In the long term, the advanced Western countries and China should all work for an international order that will be better for the third world.
我经常说，现在这些都是美国的事情，但我希望有朝一日，我们中国也有足够的经济和政治实力来管这些事情。
I often used to say that this is America's affair. I hope that one day China will also have enough economic and political power to handle these issues.
各位女士们和先生们，中国现在还是一个发展中国家，还存在着无数的问题。
Ladies and gentlemen, China is still a developing country and has countless problems.
对于这些问题，我知道的一点都不少，所以我也常常对中国持强烈的批评态度。
I have more than a little knowledge of these problems, so I'm often very critical of China.
等我对中国留学生发表演讲时，我会主要谈中国所存在的问题。
When Mr. Wang speaks to the overseas Chinese students, he will talk more about these present problems.
然而，即使存在这些问题，我认为中国前进的脚步还是打不住的。在经济上是这样，在政治上是这样，在国防上也是这样。
Nevertheless, despite these problems, I believe that China's forward march is unstoppable. This is so in economics, in politics, and in national defense.
我认为欧洲卖不卖给中国武器，对于中国的国防建设并不具有太大的实质性意义，只不过是表明欧洲对于中国是否友好而已。正如中国在经济发展上所表现出来的那样，一旦中国把资源投入到这个方向，它的进步很可能比所有的专家所预测的都要快。
Whether or not the EU sells weapons to China does not have much real significance for China's defense. It is just an expression of whether or not Europe is friendly with China. Just as with China's economic development, once China devotes resources in this direction of security, its progress can be faster than what the experts predict.
在今后的几十年内，中国人必须使用自己的诚实劳动来换取世界上的大量自然资源。如果这个进程受到阻碍，就意味着中国的生存受到了挑战。
In the next few decades, the Chinese must exchange their honest labor for large amounts of natural resources. If this process is obstructed, then it means that China's existence is being challenged.
中国人和西方人都要努力研究世界如何容纳一个人口如此众多的国家的迅速发展，在经济、政治和其他方面给这个世界带来的巨大影响。
The Chinese and the Westerners must work hard to research how the world can cope with the economic, political, and other impacts of the development of a country with a population as large as China's.
有些问题可能已经迫在眉睫了。比如说中国的石油进口，如一些中国的一些环保主义者那样，要求中国单方面的限制需求，就像我前面说的那样，既不公平，啊。
Some problems are already imminent, such as China's oil imports. If China unilaterally restricts its demand, as some conservationists in China have suggested, then this will be unfair, as I said earlier.
为什么只有美国人才有权利消费这么多的石油呢？为什么我们用自己的诚实劳动来换取石油就不可以呢？
Why is it only the Americans who have the right to consume so much oil? Why is it that we cannot use our honest labor to obtain oil?
也不现实。
And not realistic.
有谁能说服这13亿人口要他们停止发展？
Who will be able to persuade 1.3 billion people to suspend their development?
无疑的，在这样的问题上，中国需要发达国家的帮助，而发达国家在帮助中国的时候，也是在帮助他们自己。
Without doubt, China needs the help of the advanced countries with this kind of problem. And when the advanced countries are helping China, they are helping themselves.
也许人类恰恰是在应对如此巨大的挑战时，才会发明出比现在更好的国际秩序。谢谢各位。
Maybe it is only as humanity is meeting these great challenges that it can create a better international order than we have now. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
So I just finished in time.
Well, that was remarkable timing. And I feel a bit guilty because I asked Mr. Wang to take out so much of his original speech because I was worried that we would run over time. So we got it about right, I think. So we make a good team. Okay, so we have about half an hour for questions. Now, I think you were first, yeah? And then you, so, okay, some questions. Now, hang on, let's wait. If people want to leave, please leave now and then... Okay, right. You have to shout up there. Yeah. Okay. So, yes, it's first.
Do you think that Chinese and Chinese are conflicting? If there are, how do you balance the two values? If there are, how do you explain the current state?
I don't understand. The sound is a little bit louder. Taiwan's what?
请问你认为台湾的民主跟中国的民族主义之间有没有冲突？如果有的话，你如何兼顾两种价值？如果没有的话，如何解释目前的状态
？Okay, so do you want me to translate or you? The question is about whether there's a conflict between Was it nationalism
in
Taiwan?
Do you think there's a conflict between Taiwanese democracy and Chinese nationalism?
Does Mr. Wang think there is a conflict between democracy in Taiwan and Chinese nationalism?
其实我一般来说我很少谈台湾的问题，特别是跟外国人谈台湾的问题。 其实我很少在公众场合谈台湾的问题，特别是我很少跟外国人谈台湾的问题。
He's not been able to discuss the Taiwan problem very much in an open forum, and especially with foreigners.
我想。 刚才我说过，我们非常支持在中国建立一个民主的制度，所以我们谈不上和民主制度有什么冲突。
Mr. Wang says as he said in his speech, he enthusiastically supports a democratic system in China, but does that have conflict with nationalism? With democracy in Taiwan?
没有冲突，但是绝大多数中国人都认为台湾是中国的一部分。
Because most people think that Taiwan is a part of China.
如果中国实行民主制度的话，对台湾的政策很可能比现在还要强硬。
So if there's democracy in China, then the policy towards Taiwan will be much tougher.
我就想说这么多。
No, I think you were next. Yes.
You talk about potato chips and silicone chips, and a lot of it is the counterpoint that in your speech has been China versus U.S. or China and U.S. And I wonder what you think, any comments you have about Chinese nationalism in its Asia sphere. Japan, South Korea, parts of India has their potato chips and silicone chips that you can perhaps get from them rather than the U.S. So I was wondering if you had any comments about China, Chinese nationalism, and the Asia sphere of influence.
有些我没听清楚。他说，你讲的话大部分是关于中国跟美国的关系。那在亚洲之内，像跟日本、印度、Korea、韩国。他说那chip我没听清楚。The bit about the chips was what? What was the bit about the chips?
Oh, just that he had given that quite funny scenario about how the United States would not share the silicone chips and potato chips. It's really sort of an example. And I was just wondering, make the point that Japan, for example, has its silicone chips and its potato chips. You know, why must everything be framed in U.S., he's been focusing on framing things into a U.S.-China context. I'm wondering what he has to say about other countries in far closer proximity to China, such as Japan and South Korea, conceivably India and Singapore, that has that technology as well.
这我明白了，我听明白了，我可以回答，其实有一些中国人认为，比如说日本。 和美国是不同的政治实体，他们之间有矛盾，但是我不这么看，我认为在外交政策上，像日本和韩国，就是这个 South Korea 韩国这些国家的话，基本上是跟着美国走的，所以我认为中对于中国来说，跟那些国家的关系其实只是跟美国关系的一部分。我这样说可能有些人可能觉得不高兴，但我觉得是事实。
The relationship between the U.S. and Japan and South Korea, these kind of countries, is more like one political.
Somebody think that Japan is a different country from the United States. Mm. So we can develop independent relations with Japan independent of our relations with the United States, including other countries, for example, South Korea, something, the same thing. But I don't think so. I think the relationship between China and Japan is only a part of the relationship between China and the United States. Because Japan and South Korea are only followers of the United States. They don't have their independent relations with China.
sorry, there was someone up there, and then you. So it's already been answered, yeah. Okay.
这个问题我确实觉得是很奇怪的。我不知道那个比如说一个美国居民在美国能不能自己投票，就说我这个家我这个院子就独立了啊。如果这是不可以的话，那么我想这个问题就啊。
He said, this question is very strange because it's like, would an American have the right to have a vote to say that his back garden is independent?
你怎么解释美国南北战争林肯为什么不让美国的南部独立？他打了一场内战，在那场内战当中，62万美国人死去了。
And why didn't Lincoln allow the American South to be independent? And there was a huge war with so many people were killed to keep it united. Okay. So yes. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. 在谈到中国的发展的时候，你很多时候你假设有一个很大的前提，就是说中国的政府能够一直很平稳的。处理自己的内政，不出现重大的内政的失误和有所谓的内政动乱吧。我想问的是，中国的政府的在这个政治制度上，你是怎么能够保证中国的政治制度上不会出现一个官僚买办集团，或者一个代表只代表少部分富人的集团，然后和外国人勾结起来压迫中国的穷人以至于中产阶级这么一个集团的出现，来彻底阻止了中国的发展呢？你认为这个问题是今后
let me do that one first because there's a lot of people can't understand Chinese here, sorry. And I, do you want to translate it?
I'll try to say in English. How do you think in the future there is something in the structure of Chinese government or Chinese social political structure that can preventthere is a class emerges who represents only the wealthy people and some foreigner forces which they united together to utilize Chinese and take control of the majority of Chinese people. I mean, whether you think there's something...in the political structure of China that can prevent such situation become true. Thank you.
我想说你刚才这个问题是中国的很多左派常常提到的那么我的观点就是其实我在这个文章其实有很大一部分是讲这个事情的，但是由于没有时间我在这里没有细讲。我认为其实确实需要在中国建立一个民主制度来解决这些问题所以我这也是我为什么就是说支持在中国建立一个民主制度。但是这里确实有一个问题，我不希望就是在中国建立民主制度是以就破坏中国的社会稳定为代价的。那么就是说我经常写文章也发表讲话，我说我希望是在那个就是中国经济情况比较好，在中国国内社会没有出现动乱的情况之下，就没有出现严重危机的情况之下，就是说能够自上而下的建立一个民主制度因为等到危机出现的时候，可能我们建立民主制度的过程就会非常的混乱，非常的暴力，会破坏我们的经济发展。
Okay, He said he covered. I mean, this is the view of what's called the New Left in China, and it, he has covered it in the text a bit. And he himself has said that he believes China lacks a democratic system, and that a democratic system is the way to solve that problem. However, you cannot move to democracy if it means breaking the social stability, disrupting social stability. So the problem is that democracy has to develop within the context of this stable economic growth. Is that right? You're out of my range of vision, so you might have had your... Let me get a few from over here. Yes.
My question is about today's your speech. Is the Chinese nationalism under the shadow of the globalization in terms of the international relations? But I would like to interesting ask a question about the shadow of the globalization in terms of the central-local relations in China. As you say, the globalization is, has a lot of benefit to China, could be. But I think it's a lot of the regional differences in China still going on. So how can you make sure the nationalism, from your viewpoint, as I'm right, it seems to me is all the Chinese share the same national interest, which is the Cantonese interest is absolutely the same as the thinking the, and the politicians in Beijing, and the northeast part of the China, which is suffer a lot from the globalization because they stay-owned the company's reforms policy. And how come you can make sure the people in the northeast part of the China is the same interest as the same thinking as the nationalism in Beijing or the other part of the China, such as the Tibet and the other different countries in... Thank you.
我想说的是，你说的那些问题都存在，啊，就是比如中国的那个西北地区和东南沿海地区的这种利益的不同，这是现实存在的。我只想问你一个问题：即使你虽然中国也存在着户口制度，啊，比如说一个中国人想从西北地区到北京来、到上海来是有困难的，但是我想问你一个问题：一个西北地区的中国人。是到北京更容易一些还是到英国来更容易一些啊？你到北京虽然你没有北京的户口毕竟你进入北京是比较容易的但是你到英国来你很可能得不到签证就这样一个最基本的差别就告诉了你我们中国人不论你生活在西北还是生活在东南你是生活在上海北京你还是生活在 西宁它是有共同利益的最起码你可以从西宁到北京来工作如果你觉得北京生活更好的话虽然有一些难度但是你还是可以做得到的可是你要到英国或者到美国难度肯定比到北京要大得多
He acknowledges that there are problems between the center and the provinces as the questioner said but this problem is to do with the population registration system the hukou residential everyone has to have permission to live in a certain
我想说这是什么意思呢？就是说，最起码，在中国省与省之间、不同地区之间的隔阂或者障碍，要比中国和其他国家之间的那种障碍要大得多。
Let me try to translate. Mr. Wang said, "I would ask you a question. So, whether it is more difficult to migrate to England for ordinary Chinese people in the north, in the relatively poor northwest provinces?" Then the Chinese people move from the relatively economically backward areas to the rich coastal areas. So from this point of view, the Chinese people have much the same point of view on national interest.
We keep it because there are lots of people.
My question. You mentioned that China's progress should, in the future, involve the maximizing of the potential of the individual. Do you think, keeping this in mind, that China can achieve that with the Communist Party and nationalism? And democracy at the same time.
我听懂了，啊，我认为对于这些问题的预见，我不能保证，我不能说我已经预见到了这么未来的事情啊。关于中国的共产党，在这样一个背景之下，中国的共产党在中国将来的未来的中国是一个什么位置？我想，它取决于中国民主制度建立的过程，就是它通过哪个 path 哪条道路建立的过程啊。但我想说，就从我现在看到的情况来看的话，民族主义大概在一个民主的中国肯定是会存在的。
I'm not a prophet about the future of China. As to the question, the position, the future position of China, the Communist Party in the future, I think it's dependent on the process of China, of the Chinese government establishing the democratic system. I think democratization has its place in the future.
Let me see.
Is China an empire? If it is, if China is an empire, would it not allow its vassal states to have self-determination? 中国是不是一个帝国？如果它是一个帝国的话，为什么不能让各地区有民主自觉？中国的民族主义是不是变相的帝国主义？
如果说中国是一个帝国的话，那也是很久很久以前的事了。在2000多年以前，可能说中国是一个帝国。在现在的话，就是说中国的各部分已经整合得非常的好了，啊，95%的人口都说自己是汉族，啊，这就是一个证据啊。所以你现在说中国是一个帝国的话，这个我是不能同意的。
If you say that China is an empire, I don't agree. For China being an empire is a long past. For now.The different parts of China has been well coordinated and integrated.
Well, he said a bit more than that, I think, about the fact that 95% of the people now identify themselves as Han Chinese. So, yes.
Okay, I think I'm actually very shocked by your discourse that the origin of contemporary nationalism, which is from...the hostile of some intellectuals after the Cultural Revolution. Well, as far as I know, as you can tell, I'm born in the early 1980s. I haven't experienced that period. But I have a very different understanding of the origin of contemporary nationalism from you. I think it is after the Cultural Revolution that many intellectuals and also the majority of Chinese common people, they suddenly realized that China has been far behind the development of the whole world, and their respect to this great mother country is hurt.And then they hope there can be a very good and faster revitalization of this slowly developing China. And also, I think it can be observed from many books and media, and especially, as you mentioned, in the relatively open forum in the internet. So I don't agree with your point, and don't tell me this is because I didn't agree that period.
对，我说的是我自己的看法，我自己的经验啊。因为从80年代末开始，我就和他们进行辩论啊。我当然也认识到中国和世界其他国家的巨大的差距啊。在当时我就认识到，因为我很早就出国了，我1982、83年的时候就到了国外。我有自己的眼睛，我能看到这些差距的。啊，那么我想承认这些差距，认为我们中国人要赶上去，这是一回事儿；但是认为我们中国人从根本上就是一个劣等民族，这是另外一回事儿。那我就告诉你一些事实，比如说被西方人看成那个民主斗士的刘晓波先生就说过，中国是个劣等的民族，中国应该让这个世界让英国人殖民300年就好了，因为香港 被英国人殖民了一百年就变得很好吗？中国应该让英国人殖民三百年，中国应该把自己的人种都换一下。这样的言论在八十年代的时候是多得不得了的。你可能过于年轻了，在八十年代的时候你可能太小，你没有听到这些言论，但是我是听到的。啊，这个整个的一个过程就是这样一个过程。我们不接受的只是这样一部分，我们从来没有讲说我们中国人都是优点，什么都是优点。刚才我讲了，我们非常支持民主制度，而民主制度是西方人发明的。
Methodologically, I don't think it's right to.
Sorry, excuse me. We can't. Let me translate first. A lot of people can't understand Chinese, so you have to try and give them something. Mr. Wang said, in response to the question, that he was very aware of the difference between China and advanced countries. He went to Japan in 1982 and saw just how big the difference was. But what he's saying, this lady. Probably didn't experience in the 80s, maybe she was too young, was just how much the intellectuals in China at that time changed that difference in China to a sort of seeing Chinese as a second-class race or inferior nation, and that this really got to a very high point, and this is what made people like him very emotional about this and react against it.
而且我还提到一个人物，比如说刘晓波先生。
For example, Mr. Wang mentioned the very famous so-called democracy fighter, Mr. Liu Xiaobo. Because Mr. Liu Xiaobo reiterated several times in the 1980s that China is an inferior race. China, Hong Kong had been colonialized by the British.So it became developed if China, so China needs to be colonialized for at least 300 years. That's his remark at that time. Because you are very young at that time, you may not be familiar with such kind of remarks.
Yes, I think I am young, but sorry, just a last point.
No, we can't, there are other people with their hands up, sorry. We can continue this debate, I'm sure, in another venue.
Given the rapid economic progress China has been making, clearly in the process it's using a lot of natural resources. Now, in the context of if India also begins to make, you know, rapid progress in the next 10, 15 years, how do you see China's relation with India developing in that time?
其实就是说，中国人想印度的问题想的并不是太多，啊。因为就是说中国人现在主要想的问题还是跟美国和其他发达西方发达国家的关系，这是个事实啊。我想如果印度发展的也很快的话啊，我们当然可以以一个和平的方式通过市场竞争来分配这个世界上的资源，哇，这里好像没有什么太多的其他的矛盾啊，那就看我们谁的市场竞争能力更强吧。
Mr. Wang says he believes that China's main problems are not with India but with the United States and other advanced powers, and that the problem of resources with India will be solved by competition in the marketplace.
Thank you. Wang Xiaodong, you mentioned before that China has three options in the developing strategies, and you said that your opinion is it's better to choose the number three option. I just wonder whether are you implying that China should going to the same route as the former USSR because we do have resources constraints.And the limitation of intellectual resources in China. How can you devote all the resources in high tech without regarding any other developments?
那个，我想有它是苏联嘛 ，USSR 啊啊，我想苏联的崩溃跟它的这个这样的就是经济政策，就发展那个就发展高科技和发展国防工业的经济政策，并没有必然的联系啊。其实苏联。到最后也没有发展出一个那个非常大的高科技领域啊，他只是把更多钱花在了国防工业上面。但是我也想，苏联最大的问题，实际上它的崩溃的最主要的原因是政治性的，啊，经济性的原因也有一些，就是说它没有采用市场经济，啊，它始终坚持的是计划经济。那么我想说，我刚才说的第三条道路和市场经济并不完全矛盾，只说 我们在某些特殊的领域使用政府的力量，而不是使用市场的力量，但不是像苏联那样全部都是使用就是计划经济，使用那个叫什么 commandery economy， 不是使用这样的指令性的这些东西啊。而且我想强调一下，就是说我认为苏联崩溃的最主要原因是政治性的。
He thinks the collapse of the Soviet Union was more to do with the incompetence of the government rather than economics, and that his third option,
the third way,
is not the same as command economy.
Mr. Wang's point is that China needs to combine the market economy and some government intervention to develop its high tech. This is something totally different from the former Soviet's command economy.
What about someone right to the back? Right to the back, yeah.
Hi, Mr. Wang. Thank you very much for your talk. I feel like, in general, you paint a very broad picture of the future of China, and it's very economically successful and things like that. But I was wondering specifically, what do you feel about kind of the trade-off that's been happening between the economic progress and the social problems that have arisen? And specifically, I know you've made policy recommendations about development of China. Did you ever think about specific policy recommendations to combat the current social unrest and any kind of future path that would take? Thank you.
我听懂了。其实我想说，中国在这个十几年当中，或者说二十几年当中，可以说最大的长处或者唯一的长处就是经济的高速发展啊。但是我们不得不承认，就经济高速发展这一条可以解决很多很多社会问题啊。因为现在中国政府手里有了钱啊，中国人手里有了钱，中国政府手里有了钱，所以我个人认为，最起码在这个不远的将来这样一段时间当中，可预见的未来这样三五年的时间当中，中国政府它有力量用钱来解决那些你说的那些社会不安定因素，比如说贫富差距的拉大，比如说地区发展的不同，他现在可以用钱来安定这些情况，而且他现在正是这样做的啊。那么现在中国政府确实也已经有一定的意识来，就是说建立一个，就是说通过转移支付，就是 transfer payment， 通过转移支付来解决一些这种社会问题啊。但是我确实认为最根本性的解决还应该是建立一个民主制度。
I think the biggest advantage for the Chinese government is that China achieved high rate economic growth in the past 20 years. This can help solve part of the problems you have mentioned. Just because Chinese government has become wealthier than before, it can use such ways as the transfer payment to solve some of the domestic problems. I think within the 3 or 5 years, Chinese government is economically competent to solve these problems ahead. I think the biggest challenge for the Chinese government and the Chinese people is to establish a democratic system in China.
Not everyone's going to be able to get it. Okay, one here, and then up there. I think that will be it. So you first, and then someone who's up there. Yeah. I'm sorry, I think maybe. But we are, yeah, we should finish at half past. So you first.
Yeah. 我想问您是否认为中国是否会成为二十一世纪世界发展的驱动力？第二个问题就是，中国自古以来就有中央和地方中央的指令不能下达地方和地方腐败的问题，然后即使我们中央有很好的政策，地方上面也会有说不同的利益冲突，而不能事实上并不能完成关于中国的那个指令下达的很好的实施，并且许多关于中央指令的实施都其实是暂时性的， 或者是在短是十分短期性的，并不能有十分长期的效用。
Sure, please.
Okay, would you please translate into English yourself?
The first question is that whether you think that China will be the driving force in the global economy in the 21st century. The second question is that China has a long history of conflict between central and local government and conflict of interest between local governments, and whether you think that the policy, even they have good ones set by the central, whether they will be fully completed by the local government, or will there still be a lot of corruption problems in the local?
我想回答这个问题。第一个问题就是中国会不会成为就是二十一世纪的就是发展的动力？
不，世界大战的策源地。
世界大战策源地，是
这意思吗？
不是吧？不是吧？
Your first question, please. 经济发展驱动力。
驱动力。所以这就差太远了。
对。
经济发展驱动力，我想这个有两个前提。第一个是中国能够保持社会的安定，就是不出现大的动乱，第一个前提。第二个前提是这个国际的和平环境、自由贸易能够维持下去。我在这个文章里讲过，能够维持下去，只要有这两条，中国肯定会成为二十世纪，最起码在五十年当中会成为二十世纪的就是经济发展的强大动力，可能是最强大的动力啊。这是第一个问题啊，翻译一下。
The first question, yes.
Haven't got any time really.
Yes. In reply to your first question, I think the sustained economic growth for China in the coming decades of years is dependent on two premises. First is the social stability. The second is international peaceful environment.
就还有那个国际贸易的自由，叫
and especially a free trade system.
那么第二个问题，你说中国那个就是说是历史上始终存在着中央和地方的矛盾，中央的政令不能下达到地方。其实我跟你讲，从大的方面来看，这个问题不像有些人说的这么严重。从小的方面来看，它这种问题肯定是存在的。所以很早就有所谓诸侯经济的研究，啊，就有诸侯经济的研究，这他是中国人，他听得懂，
啊，
就有诸侯经济的研究。那么那个从大的方面来说，实际上。没有问题，没有这么严重。我们从93年的税制改革就看得出来，在93年以前，就是像中国一些著名的经济学家和政治学家，比如说胡鞍钢和王绍光，他们都讲过，就中国的那个中央这个管制能力的这个下降，或者中央管制能力的不够。但是从93年的税制改革，我们一下就看出来了，其实中央是管不管的问题，它完全有这个力量。93年税制改革以后，中央加强了对地方财政的控制，中央的钱一下就变得很多很多。就是说这个问题并不大，中央是现在在中国现在的政治体制之下，中央是能够控制地方的，而且我可以告诉你，其实这样控制得很厉害。
The question I think as to the central government's inability to control local governments, I think this question is overstated because in Chinese history things are always like that. The central yes, you mentioned the problem. The problem has been described in a special terminology as the economic feudalism, but this problem is not so serious, I think. Actually, when the central government is determined to control the local government, I think the strength of control is enormous. For example, in 1994, two famous Chinese scholars, Mr. Hu Wangang and Mr. Wang Shaoguang, suggested to the central government to impose taxation reforms. Taxation reforms. Yes, we also call it tax sharing reforms.The central government got an instant increase in the share of taxes. That's to say, concentrate most of the taxes in the hands of the central government. So I think the central government has a solid control of the local governments.
I'm afraid it is 7:30 and we do have to. I know there are many people have their hands up, and that's a sign of the interest that there is in this topic, and I really would like to thank Mr. Wang so much for coming so far at this panel, and also Mr. Yang.